critically analyzing global affairs. This is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, what's happening in the wild, wild world? Today we've got some things that have caught my eye. The Russian mission in Geneva has debunked the rumors that Russia was going to withdraw from the World Health Organization. They said those rumors are simply not true. Russia will actively participate in the upcoming 75th World Health Assembly, which begins in 2 days on May 22nd. Dang, that would have been good news. I actually participated in the 62nd World Health Assembly back in 2009. We have SWIFT is reporting that they are conducting new experiments paving the way for international payments using CBDCs. They are building out the architecture. It says SWIFT, in collaboration with Capgemini, is conducting new experiments to test how we can interlink domestic CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, and take the next step towards seamless cross-border payments involving digital currencies. So I guess if you get penalized by your government through your local CBDC, maybe that effect will also translate internationally. So a lot is going on. We have CNN Business here reporting that scared investors have not hoarded this much cash since 9/11. It discusses how one sign of how deep the dread is running as inflation soars, the Federal Reserve raises interest rates, and the war in Ukraine drags on. Fund managers are holding their highest levels of cash since the aftermath of September 11th, 2001. So the mood hanging over the markets is anxious and gloomy, whether you're a pro or casual trader. As well, on that note, there was another really important piece of news. Ah, yes, where is it? Here we go. A former committee member of China's central bank has said the seizing of Russia's central bank assets poses a serious threat to the security of China's overseas assets. China should try not to be a creditor to the U.S. as much as possible. A lot of people have been talking about this moment of de-dollarization, of nobody wanting U.S. dollars anymore, and then the U.S. as the world reserve coming undone. It seems slowly but surely we are on that path. How long that takes is anybody's good guess. It's really hard to say. This was an interesting piece from Yahoo. China's international schools are hit by exodus of teachers dejected by COVID curbs. There was even one teacher being offered upwards of $7,000 a month just to stay. And she was like, no, she hightailed it out of there. I hightailed it out of the region 2 years ago. I was an international teacher in Kazakhstan, and I could see the writing on the wall way back this time 2 years ago, and I said, I am getting out of Dodge. I don't care. And they say now that they have 40% of the international teachers are leaving because they just, people around the world, it says, have been reading about the lockdowns and just don't feel a need to subject themselves to that. I wouldn't either. We have as well Finland losing its main gas supply after refusing payment in rubles to Russia. Apparently 100% of Finland's gas supply came from Russia, but it only used gas as 5% of its energy source. So it won't be too big a deal for Finland. So yeah, we'll be right back with our guest here on TNT Radio.
Less of the culture you don't want.
I've had enough of this cancel culture.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is the Hrvoje Moric Show on TNTRadio.live, streaming live through the website, the smartphone app, I don't even know, wherever else, but as well, Rumble, YouTube, and now on Odyssey, literally the day after I had the Odyssey CEO here on TNT. Someone at TNT must be listening. I'm a big fan of Odyssey, the best YouTube alternative in my opinion. I'm joined by Nikola Mikovic, a semi-regular guest here on TNT. He's a freelance journalist, researcher, and analyst based in Serbia. His work focuses mostly on the foreign policies of Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine. He writes for a number of publications, which include Diplomatic Courier, Asia Times, which I'm a big fan of, CGTN, Tsarism, Global Comment, as well as Geopolitics and Empire, which I'm also a big fan of. Hello, Nikola.
Hi, Hrvoje. Thank you for having me on your show.
How's Serbia doing these days?
It's doing fine. Serbia still hasn't imposed sanctions on Russia, so I think the only reason why Belgrade still hasn't done that is because nobody pressured Serbian authorities to do that. We remember that Serbia imposed sanctions on Belarus and it suspended visa-free regime with Iran. And that's because the EU pressured Serbian government to impose those sanctions and to break ties with Iran. So the reason why Serbian government still apparently refuses to join anti-Russian sanctions is because there is no serious pressure. So once that pressure comes up, then Serbia will definitely join the West and impose sanctions on Russia. Now, you mentioned Finland and energy. So I don't expect any serious problems in terms of energy supplies, even if Serbia joins anti-Russian sanctions, because that's the Kremlin's modus operandi. So if you impose sanctions on Russia, you can expect to get either free gas or very cheap gas. Ukraine's been receiving free gas since 2014, and then I believe until 2017 or so. So after the allegedly pro-Russian leader of Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych, was overthrown, the new authorities, they decided not to purchase, not to pay for Russian gas, and Russia continued delivering gas to Ukraine for free. Now it's rather questionable if those European countries that refuse to open bank accounts in rubles, if they still pay for gas in dollars, euros, or if they get it for free, because Russian President Vladimir Putin, he recently said that they refuse to open bank accounts in rubles, and Gazprom, Russia's energy giant, continues delivering gas. So does that mean that they get free gas? It's a mystery, but I will not be surprised if that's the case. But anyway, sorry for talking too much. So go ahead with your questions.
No rules here on TNT. You're free to talk as little or much as you like. And you had an article, just any further thought on Serbia. You wrote about the decoupling of Serbia from Russia. And something interesting that I read recently, Anonymous, a lot of people know about Anonymous, this mysterious anonymous hacking group, right, online, yeah, that at times appears to be sort of like the good guys, sort of like a Batman figure who's like kind of a bad guy, but they make him look like a good guy. For me, I don't know if you heard this, that Anonymous wants to attack Serbia.
I've heard that, yeah, but I'm not sure if that's, I've heard that, but I'm not sure if that's the real Anonymous or some guy who's making fun of it.
I would just say my theory on that would be, I really am skeptical about a lot of these anonymous things and attribute them likely to some military intelligence operations. So, and you can tell, why would they be attacking Serbia, who so far has kind of been with like Russia. I mean, at the moment, Serbia is kind of like an enemy of the West, perhaps. And so it's just kind of telling if Anonymous wants to attack Serbia, then maybe, you know, it's like the CIA or something. But, you know, any thoughts on that or further thoughts on decoupling?
No reason for anyone to attack Serbia. I think the country is deeply in the Western geopolitical orbit. What's interesting is that the country struggles with a wave of bomb threats. It started, I think, a couple of months ago, or maybe even more, when this war in Ukraine started. And then Serbian air company called Air Serbia started receiving those bomb threats. And now schools in Serbia, they also started getting emails about bomb threats. I'm not sure if it's an inside job or if someone from countries such as Poland and Ukraine does that. That's what some experts in Serbia here claim. But in any case, I think it's part of preparations for sanctions that Serbia is going to impose in Russia. So apparently there's a huge pressure on Serbia, and then the government will have no choice but to join the sanctions. And I think they have to do that because a lot of people here are actually pro-Russian. So they need to prepare the ground, to prepare the population for such an unpopular decision. It is a kind of decoupling, although it is quite questionable if Serbia and Russia were ever a real couple, because it's a very strange relationship that the two countries had. As I said, Serbia is completely surrounded by the EU and by NATO. And it is virtually impossible for such a country to be part of Russia's zone of influence. So for now, we could say it's balancing. But if the EU and the United States pressure Serbian government, then the country will simply have to pick a side, and it will be the Western side and the Ukrainian side.
So to get back to the Ukraine war, you wrote another piece, very critical about Professor X, Putin, and the Russian X-Men, Russia. They're not all they're cracked out to be, you say. And as the days and weeks go by, you know, I am starting to see more and more of your points. I recall my interview with Michael Beckley, who said that America will remain a strong superpower. I've been of the opinion that the West will collapse in more accelerated fashion, but it seems like there's a second wind, and the Western American British EU empire is going for the gold. As you say, it's like they're going to get Serbia. They took down Pakistan. They're just expanding. They're almost at the point of achieving full spectrum dominance, except for, you know, Russia and China and Iran and some of these countries. And it looks like they're going to risk war to attempt total global domination. And you say that a lot of the Kremlin's policies are not very good, that, you know, Putin's dear Western partners, as you say, froze hundreds of billions of dollars of Russian money or gold. And it's like, you beg the question, why did Russia hold its assets abroad in the first place? You know, who's responsible for such an epic failure? Like, yeah, you could have seen that coming. You make a few other points that Putin is surrounded by these neoliberal oligarchs, and that a number of them are not interested in... you cite someone saying they are doing their best to prevent Russia from defeating Ukrainian armed forces, and that the Kremlin is actively helping the United States achieve its goals. So what's going on here?
All right. So I agree with you that the United States and the Western civilization in general, that it is a declining empire, but it will decline, but it will take 100 or 200 years. Because it's a natural process, it's a historical process, and it doesn't happen overnight. It takes a lot of time for an empire to decline.
I would just add there, maybe what's as important is who will decline the slowest among all of the, you know, powers today. I think maybe that's more important. So maybe everyone's declining, but the one who gets to the bottom the last wins in that sense.
That's true. I'm not sure who that will be. Maybe the Islamic world, but I cannot say for sure. I don't know. What I see is that you mentioned Russia and its gold reserves and so on. I mean, it was so obvious that the West was going to block the access to those reserves and freeze them. So what kind of idiot you have to be to not to withdraw your money that you have in Western banks before you decide to launch war in Ukraine? So it doesn't make any sense. And we had Russian Prime Minister Mishustin. He said that the freezing of Russian assets by Western countries, it was a typical piracy and theft. Okay, so what are you going to do now? Nothing, obviously. They will just continue crying about that, but there is nothing Russia can do about it. The Russian Federation, they apparently seized Western planes that were on the Russian territory in February when this war started. But I don't think they can do anything with those planes. They cannot sell them to third countries because nobody is going to buy stolen or seized planes. They cannot use them in Russia. I mean, they can, but they have their own planes. And it's useless, basically. And in this case, it is the West that has the upper hand over Russia. We know that U.S. Congress now plans to provide Ukraine with around $40 billion. Not all of that money will go to Ukraine, of course. I'm pretty sure that the vast majority of that money will go to the U.S. military-industrial complex. But still, they can use the Russian money to fund Ukraine. That's what I would do for sure. So if I were Biden, I would just use Russian money, that $300 billion, to fund Ukraine. But that's just me. That's what I would do because I'm a very bad man. I'm pretty sure that Biden would never do such a thing, right? Because he would rather risk losing the election than taking money from the U.S. taxpayers. He would rather take it from the Americans than from the Russian oligarchs, right? I mean, I'm being sarcastic. Of course, they're going to use the Russian money to fund the war in Ukraine. That's what every empire would do. Why would they spend their own money to fund their proxies? Why wouldn't they use the money from their enemy to fund the proxies that would fight that enemy? It perfectly makes sense. And then you have all those people in Russia that are still in charge. I mentioned Elvira Nabiullina and many others. And they were never fired. So the very fact that they were never fired suggests that Putin is satisfied with the job that they're doing. There are many pro-Putin propagandists who claim that there is a fifth column in Russia, that they are actually in charge. Okay, even if that's true, then what prevented Putin from firing them? He's been in power for 20 years, more than 20 years, but he didn't have enough time to do that. Or what's the problem? I don't get it. So Russia is definitely part of the global system. And you mentioned that Russia will not withdraw from the World Health Organization, which is another indication that Russia will remain part of the existing global world order. What's happening in Ukraine, my opinion, is...
Nicola, let me stop you there. We're going to have to take a quick vodka break. I'll just talk about Russia and Ukraine.
Sure.
Everyone stick around here on TNT Radio.
Politically Incorrect on TNT Radio.
The very point that we were just touching on there was energy. And the very point we end up with, if we go net zero, is zero improvement in energy, would be my take on it. It's a crazy proposition. There's so many facets to it that make no sense, especially in this nation when we have all the opportunity to actually do something. When you come back to even creating manufacturing and local production of things, which we have, we've absconded from that particular thing decades ago. But here we have an opportunity in the current, we can see what's happening in Europe. couldn't we start to do something, forget net zero and finding out how we can use our wonderful advantage to the benefit of A, this nation, and B, the people who live in it?
Well, I think what's become clear overseas is that there is a trade-off between energy security and that means, you know, affordable and reliable energy.
Mm.
And the sort of the green dream, the net zero dream.
Politically Incorrect on TNT Radio.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on the 21st of May.
Freedom of speech is fundamental to a civil and democratic society. Open and honest dialogue allows people to share their ideas and opinions without the threat of force and government oppression. Freedom of speech also means hearing opinions that we may not like. Hi, I'm David Limbrick, and I'm your Victorian Senate candidate for the Liberal Democrats. I want to talk to you about the ninth policy in the Liberal Democrats' Freedom Manifesto, free speech. The free exchange of ideas and opinions allows these ideas and opinions to be tested, with the more robust being accepted. The Liberal Democrats will do three things. Firstly, abolish Section 18C of the Discrimination Act. This piece of legislation makes it unlawful to offend, insult, or humiliate, and hauls those who fall foul of it up before tribunals headed by bureaucrats at the Australian Human Rights Commission. It's an affront to free speech and the idea of a fair trial. Secondly, we'll stop media censorship. A decade and a half ago, the consensus in the West was that it was necessary to censor what was thought to be radical propaganda, but this has led to an internet filter consisting of thousands of blocked websites for a wide range of reasons. Some of these may be well-intentioned, but putting this power in the hands of the government can rapidly turn into the banning of anything that does not suit their political agenda. It's too much power for any government to have. And finally, we encourage a free and open internet. Much of the increasingly political censorship imposed by tech companies is done in fear of further regulation being targeted at them to tackle what they think to be misinformation or fake news. This is particularly true in Australia, where platforms and page owners can be held liable for what is posted by other people. A clear framework of less internet censorship by the government would take away much of the incentive for tech companies to censor their own content. If this policy is implemented, Australia will become a place where ideas are discussed freely and information is shared without the threat of political censorship. To learn more, head to www.ldp.org.au.
Authorised by John Humphreys for the Liberal Democratic Party, Mount Waverley, Victoria.
Instead of putting a cracker under a politician, why not some TNT? Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back on the Hrvoje Moric show, having a conversation between a Croat and a Serbian. We're talking to analyst Nikola Miković. You can find him on Twitter at Nikola _ Miković. And before you continue on Ukraine, I just wanted to mention something. Today, was it today? I uploaded my latest podcast from Geopolitics and Empire, where I talked with Professor William Robinson out in California, who's a good scholar. And I asked him the question. He talks about this global police state that we're living in and this global civil war, basically all of this pandemic, COVID stuff, and this technocracy. But he talks about this transnational elite that exists. And he made a great point. He said the transnational elites are united across the world, including in Russia and China. You have the same, this same Russian oligarchy, this Russian elite, which are in tune with the international elite. They share the same interests. And he says the two interests are maximizing profit and keeping a clamp on rebellion from below. And so, in you know, this transnational elite includes Russia. It includes China. It includes all countries. And so I don't know if you have any final thought on that.
I see nothing strange about it. It's quite natural. They have to be connected. That's the very core of capitalism. That's how system works. Where do those Russian oligarchs and the Kremlin officials, where do they have their money? In Tehran, right? In Iranian Islamic banks? Well, no, in the West, of course, because they're part of the Western-dominated world order. And as I said, I think this conflict in Ukraine is it is some kind of a pretext for transformation of the entire existing global order. So I cannot say at this point what exactly they're going to create, but we see that it is heavily linked with energy and with supply chain system. Something's going on, and we will see what exactly is going to happen in maybe by the end of the year or so. We'll have a clear picture. It is quite obvious that this war is going to last for a long time. I think we mentioned in one of our previous shows that the advisor of Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky, the name of his advisor is Oleksiy Arestovych. He said that he thinks that the war will last, I think, until 2035 or so. Let's not forget that he predicted the Russian invasion of Ukraine. He predicted Russia's attempts to capture Kiev and Kharkov and so on. So I think he's making a good point. He said that there's going to be at least two or three wars between Russia and Ukraine. So even if they sign some kind of deal, agreement, truce, it will be truce, basically, because there's going to be another war until one of the two sides de facto capitulates. What's happening now on the ground, basically, Russian forces, they managed to break through Ukrainian defenses in certain sections of the Donbass, and it is west of the town of Popasna in the Donbass, and they captured several villages. So they made some significant gains. And right now, the situation there that's in the Luhansk region of the Donbass, it is pretty critical for the Ukrainian forces. And I think Russians will manage to capture the city of Severodonetsk in the near future, maybe in a month or so, unless Ukraine sends reinforcement. It's a mystery to me why they're still not sending reinforcement, because they mobilized enough troops. And reportedly, they have around 700,000 people there who are ready to fight. So it's a mystery to me what they're waiting for. But if the Russians manage to capture Severodonetsk and Lysychansk and other cities in the region, I think they will turn them into Mariupol. Now, speaking of Mariupol, the battle for Mariupol is finally over. So the Russians now fully control the city. The Russians and the self-proclaimed Donetsk People's Republic, they control the city. And Azovstal, those Azov fighters, they were evacuated. They were evacuated to prisons. So according to the Western and Ukrainian narrative, it was part of the evacuation. According to the Russian narrative, they surrendered, so they were captured. In my opinion, yeah, they surrendered, that's for sure. There's no doubt. But if the Kremlin eventually decides to release them or to exchange them for captured Russian soldiers, then we can say that they were actually evacuated, because otherwise they would have been killed or they would die of hunger in Azovstal. The Russian troops, they now can continue fighting for other strategically important cities in Donbass, such as Slavyansk and Kramatorsk. But I don't think they will manage to capture those cities in the near future, maybe until the end of the summer, if they get enough reinforcement, which is rather questionable. Now, speaking of Kramatorsk, it is one of the cities that pro-Russian forces controlled back in 2014 when this whole war started. And then when they had to leave the city to abandon their positions, and the town was captured by the Ukrainian forces. And then Putin said that only complete idiots can claim that Kramatorsk is not Ukraine. And now, 8 years later, Putin insists that Kramatorsk and Mariupol and all other cities in the Donbass, that they're not Ukraine, that they're part of the Donetsk People's Republic. So the line of the party, which is a Soviet term, the line of the party has changed, and Putin started using new rhetoric. So the battle for the Donbass goes on, and Ukraine also made some gains in the Kharkiv region. Significant gains, because the Russians, they had to withdraw their troops all the way to the Russian border. We will see what will happen But I think Ukraine will, it has capacity to launch a large-scale offensive both in Kharkiv and in other sections of the front line, namely in Transnistria, which is where we spoke about that region last time. Why Ukraine is not launching that offensive is a mystery. I don't think they got the green light from the United States to do that. And why they didn't get it, I don't know. We know that recently Russian General Gerasimov spoke with the American, I believe it was the Minister of Defense Secretary of the United States. So I was quite surprised, actually, because I thought that the United States and Russia were bitter enemies and that the world was on the brink of the World War III. But I guess I was wrong. I think they're still partners because they still communicate, they still make deals and so on. So if Ukraine does not get the green light from the US to launch a major offensive, then it is quite possible that Russians will manage to capture those significant Donbas cities by the end of the summer. So that's about the situation on the front line.
I think they hadn't spoken since February. And you know, maybe they're waiting for the $40 billion that they just got in arms. Maybe they're waiting for the arms and equipment to come over.
Could be.
On the previous note, I forgot to mention George Galloway also said something interesting when we're talking about these transnational elite. He said globalization is not some dewy-eyed internationalist dream; it's the homogenization of humanity for the purposes of crushing all of us under the iron heel of monopoly capitalism, where the world will be run by and for a handful of Western oligarchs enforced by the U.S. empire. Now, I'm definitely no socialist, but I can't really see anything wrong with what he said there. And I'm just curious, so you kind of laid out the latest SITREP situation report in the Ukraine-Russia war. I don't follow it day to day. There are Telegram channels that I guess do a good job covering moment by moment day to day activities. For me, that's just kind of tiring and a lot of work, and it's a lot of things to sift through to figure out, you know, what's good info and what isn't. How are you able to do it? How do you follow figure out what's going on the ground?
Yeah, that's the only reason why I created a Telegram account, so that I could monitor the situation on the ground and to communicate with you, of course. I follow both Ukrainian and Russian accounts, and I try to make some conclusions, and I follow all the maps and everything. I've been covering this conflict since 2014, so it's not that difficult. What you need to understand is that you should not take those Russian officials too seriously. So that's the most important lesson, because they're notorious liars, just like Ukrainian officials. I mean, that guy Arestovich, he said that they simply have to lie because otherwise the whole system would collapse. And we know that the first victim of the war is truth, of course. So there's a lot of lies, and it's not that easy to find out what's really going on. But when you see videos of either Russian or Ukrainian troops waving their flag on the top of a certain administration of any city or village or town that they captured, then you can be quite sure that that really happened, because it's visual confirmation. I usually don't follow those Western analysts who talk about the situation in Ukraine. I rather try to get information from those people who are on the ground and who see what's really going on. And I know some people who are there in the Donbas, and some of them told me about what's really happening. Both sides suffer massive losses and casualties. There's a lot of dead troops on both sides. So the level of destruction in Ukraine is is horrific. It's much worse than what we experienced here in the Balkans 20, 30 years ago. Someone told me that, for example, that city of Mariupol, that's been completely destroyed. Now, apparently, the Russians will build a smart city in Mariupol and in all other Donbass cities.
Really?
I don't think that's going to... Well, apparently, but I don't think that's going to happen because it's extremely expensive to build a smart city. I don't think the Russians have money for that. Maybe in some parts of Ukraine that will be under... under Ukrainian control, but it will be.
I just learned about, because you've also written about the Nagorno-Karabakh war and Armenia, Azerbaijan, and that apparently, who was it? Azerbaijan was.
Yeah, they started building a smart city.
Smart city. It's like this is a trend now. And this goes with the whole Great Reset thing, where build back better. They want to destroy our current system and then recreate everything as a smart city technocracy. We're seeing that in Azerbaijan, and this is the first time I heard this. So now you're saying in Mariupol they want to install build back better as a smart city. Yeah,
I know that's what someone told me, but I don't buy it because I think the Russians, they don't have money for that. In Azerbaijan, yes, they are building a smart city, but it's not all over Nagorno-Karabakh. It's just one city in that region. Azerbaijan can afford that. I think it can afford to build a smart city because it is an energy-rich country and it's not under Western sanctions. But Russia, I just cannot imagine Russia providing funds for reconstruction of Mariupol. And there's plenty of Mariupols all over Ukraine that Russia will have to rebuild. And it's extremely expensive. Yeah, they managed to rebuild Grozny after the end of the Second Chechen War. But now you'll have 30 Groznys or 30 Mariupols, because a lot of towns and cities all over Ukraine and the Donbass have been completely destroyed. We'll see how Russia will manage to fund the reconstruction. Now, when it comes to smart cities, again, it's an extremely expensive process. It's very expensive to build such a city. And those people living in the Donbass, they're, and in Ukraine in general, they're very poor. So can you imagine someone living in a smart city or a smart building? He has to pay bills for that. It's very expensive. He cannot afford that. So I just don't believe that's going to happen anytime soon. Maybe in certain parts of Ukraine that will be under Ukrainian control, and then the West will maybe provide funds for smart cities or smart buildings somewhere, but not all over Ukraine, because again, it's very expensive, and people living there, they cannot approve living in smart cities.
I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat. If we follow the logic of Klaus Schwab, mass depopulation. So, maybe they're going to use the wars to depopulate a percentage, and then use the vaccines or the pandemic stuff another portion. And then whoever's left will be herded into the smart cities around the world, from Azerbaijan to Mariupol to you name it. In any case, we're going to have to take our second break. For a bit of Shlivovica or Rakia. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on Saturday, May 21st. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Now we have nearly arrived, and it's only a matter of hours before all voting Australians will have made a decision which may seal our fate for the next few years. Whatever the result, the fight for freedom must continue post-election day. While the legacy media has distorted the big issues in this election campaign, I must say it was great to see Professor Gigi Foster's appearance on ABC's Q&A last night. Hopefully she will stimulate some thinking among Australians before they vote tomorrow. She slammed the assumption raised by host Tony Jones that Australia has managed to achieve one of the lowest death rates and best performing economies through this pandemic, as if government restrictive actions helped. But correlation does not imply causation, which Professor Foster wisely explained. Let's hope this adds some extra votes tomorrow for the many freedom-loving candidates. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again. Then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We are back on our final stretch with Serbian analyst Nikola Mikovic. Find him on Twitter at Nikola_Mikovic. And we should look at, I guess, the Russian NATO CSTO, which is known as the Collective Security Treaty Organization. Again, you're pessimistic on this. You are, I think you don't see many of the other members really backing Russia, like Kazakhstan and others. What's going on here?
Well, Russia does not see them backing Moscow either. Here's the thing. The Collective Security Treaty Organization is apparently the Russia-dominated organization, but its members do not support Russia's military adventure in Ukraine, which is very interesting. When the United States launched its invasion of Iraq in 2003, it didn't do it on its own. It was joined by Great Britain, by Poland, and some other countries. So it made sure that it has allies. Russia is on its own in this war against Ukraine that is backed by the West. Belarus is the only country that provided support to Russia, although its troops did not participate and do not participate in this war. But Minsk allowed Russia to use Belarusian territory to launch strikes in Ukraine. All other members of this Collective Security Treaty Organization, they attempt to preserve their relatively neutral position regarding this war. They did not condemn Russia's actions, but they did not support the Kremlin either. And it seems to me that they're trying to distance themselves from Moscow because they see that things are not going pretty good for Russia, despite those significant gains in the Donbass that they made over the past week. In the meantime, we got information that countries such as Finland and Sweden are seeking to join NATO, and other countries are interested, apparently Bosnia and Herzegovina and so on. I don't know any country that is interested in joining the CSTO. Maybe that's because Russia is not that attractive. They know that Russia cannot protect them because Russia cannot protect itself. Ukraine's been conducting drone and airstrikes on the Russian territory on a daily basis. It's destroyed oil depots in Russia's cities of Belgorod. Conducted several drone strikes in Bryansk region in Russia and so on. Russia proved that it cannot protect itself. And according to the Article 4 of the CSTO treaty, I have to quote it. So an act of aggression, which is an armed attack that threatens security, stability, territorial integrity, and sovereignty against one of the member states will be considered as a collective act of aggression on all member states of the CSTO. In other words, what Ukraine did is an act of aggression on all member states of the CSTO, right? Because it destroyed oil depots and territory of the Russian Federation. But Russia did not appeal for help to the CSTO. There's a lot of reasons why. First of all, it would be a clear demonstration of weakness, because if Russia cannot defeat Ukraine on its own, then what can it expect against NATO if it cannot defeat Ukraine? And if it needs allies against Ukraine, it's another demonstration of weakness. There's many other reasons, but the CSTO exists basically only on paper. It did deploy troops to Kazakhstan in January this year, I think it is quite possible that it will have to deploy troops to Tajikistan, which is facing, not very good situation in its rest of the south region. And there are reports that it's called the ISK, it's Islamic State, that's operating in Afghanistan and in South Tajikistan, that there are reports that they're attacking Tajikistan, although the authorities refuse to confirm that. But the situation there could deteriorate in the near future, and it is quite possible that CSTO will have to intervene. But it will definitely not intervene in Ukraine, and that's where Russia needs help for sure. But Russia refuses to conduct declare war and to declare nationwide mobilization. So how can it expect other countries to join it if it's not willing to do anything on its own, first of all? I'm not sure what will be the future of the CSTO, but the very fact that Russia demonstrated weakness is not, it does not pave the way for a bright future for the Russian dominated organization, because other countries that maybe were interested, maybe there were some countries that were interested in joining the organization, now they will have to double think, because they see that Russia cannot help them in case someone attacks them. In the meantime, NATO, which is apparently Russia's major opponent, is expanding, and the enlargement process is going on pretty good. I think Finland and Sweden will join NATO despite those blackmails, if we can put it like that, by Turkey and your home on Croatia. I mean, you know quite that, Hrvoje, that Croatia, just like Serbia, is not a sovereign country. So it's mm-hmm. virtually impossible for Croatia to veto Finland and Sweden from joining NATO, unless it gets the approval from the United States to do that. So it must be part of a wider deal that we still cannot understand what it's all about. But when it comes to Turkey, yeah, I think Turkish President Erdogan is trying to get some concessions from the United States. So that's why it threatens to veto Finland and Sweden's NATO membership. When it comes to Croatia, it's a mystery to me why the U.S. allows Croatia to threaten Finland and Sweden to not to allow them to join the organization. But I think they will join. If it's part of the agenda, then they will sure join sooner or later. And it will be another Russian geopolitical defeat that the Kremlin propagandists will, of course, try to portray as victory.
So you think somehow they will twist the arm of Erdogan, and then Finland and Sweden will move into NATO?
Well, yeah, he's supposed to talk to Finland's authorities over the weekend. I think they will make a deal, maybe not now, but in the future for sure. If it's part of the agenda, as I said, then the two countries will definitely join NATO. And if Finland joins, then I don't see the point of this so-called special military operation that Russia is conducting in Ukraine, because officially, the reason why Russia attacked Ukraine is because it wanted to prevent Ukraine from joining NATO. So how come Russia is not about to attack Finland now? How come Finland can join NATO and Ukraine cannot? It doesn't make much sense.
I don't know if you saw that meme the other day I posted. I can't find the photo, but the award, there was like someone made an award for, here it is. Says the Secretary General of NATO proudly presents this award to Vladimir Putin for his outstanding achievement as the 2022 NATO Salesman of the Year.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
I would agree. It does seem like Finland and Sweden will get in. Russia said they're building, as a result, they're building on the western border of Russia military bases now. Just a comment on Croatia. I'm supremely sad about my country we're taken over by the globalists. We're like a tiny little country. We don't have our own banks. Like all the shops are owned, you know, hotels are owned by Russian oligarchs and foreigners. So many foreigners are buying property. And I just, you know, if I ever went back, I would go live in the middle of nowhere in one of my grandparents' villages or on some island and just like fish or something and just stay away from the modern world because it's so, you know, in some ways it's depressing. Life there is beautiful, you know, nature and food. So I would just kind of like forget all of this nonsense and try to like, you know, try to be happier. Let me see.
Yeah, you just described the situation in Serbia. There's no difference. So both countries are controlled by foreign powers. So they're not sovereign countries at all. They are heavily dependent on foreign actors that are operating in this region. I think that's the same situation in Ukraine, but it will be too late before they realize that that they're just pawns in this game played by Russia and the United States and who knows who else is interested in this game.
We've got a few minutes left. There are a few things I read that were interesting. Ukraine reportedly plans to mobilize 1 million troops. Russia, on the other hand, does not plan to declare war on Ukraine and have a nationwide mobilization. You've been saying that. I read in Al Arabiya, a sign of Russia's urgent need to bolster its war effort in Ukraine, Parliament said it would consider a bill to allow Russians over 40 and foreigners over 30 to sign up for the military. That sounds like desperation. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, it is. I mean, they're taking half measures. They refuse to declare a nationwide mobilization. But I think eventually they will have to do that because otherwise they will be defeated in Ukraine. You mentioned those 40 billion. So sooner or later, Ukraine will get a lot of weapons. Right now, Ukraine has more drones than combat drones than Russian army. And they got Western-made artillery systems. They got all kinds of weapons, and they will continue receiving weapons. And eventually, they will be ready to launch a large-scale counteroffensive. I said that it is possible that they will have to eventually capture certain villages or maybe towns in Western Russia in order to prevent Russia from continuing their military operation in the Donbass. So that's an option also. We will see what will happen. But in any case, this war is not going to end anytime soon. It will continue. And it seems to me that there are forces in both in Russia and the United States, the forces that are interested that this war lasts as long as possible. The very fact that Russia launched this invasion with such a limited number of troops, less than 200,000 troops, it was a clear sign that they did not plan to seize Kiev and to end the war in 3 or 4 days, which was apparently the original plan. I don't think that was the plan. I don't think they're so stupid. I refuse to believe that their generals and politicians are so stupid. I think they just had to follow the instructions that they got from the Kremlin. And those people who are in charge in the Kremlin, they knew what's happening and why they want this war to last as long as possible. At this point, I cannot say what's the reason for that. I think that it's about the transformation of the global energy system and so on. But it will take some time before we see what was the real reason why this war started. NATO expansion was not the reason because, as I said, Ukraine apparently wanted to join NATO and then Russia attacked it and Finland can freely join NATO. There is nothing Russia will do about it. So that's not the reason. The demilitarization of Ukraine is not the reason either because the country is more militarized than ever. It got all kinds of weapons from the West. So what Putin did was quite opposite to what he said on the 24th of February when he launch this invasion. So you should definitely not trust this guy because he's a notorious liar, just like all other leaders in this world.
All politicians in every country, it's the transnational elite and their great reset. We've got like a minute left. Real quick thought. I got this from the committee member of China Central Bank, former committee, says the seizing What does he say? That the seizing of Russia's central bank assets poses a serious threat to the security of China's overseas assets. China should try not to be a creditor to the U.S. as much as possible. You think China is going to start getting rid of dollars?
I don't think so. I think China is also very dependent on the West, and because all those Western corporations are operating in China, and China's its export is dependent on the West. So it is also part of the global economic system. I don't see China being decoupled from the West anytime soon, if at all.
All right, we're out of time. People can find you on Twitter, I think, best place where they can find your articles, Nikola_Mikovic. I think we'll be talking to you somewhere in about a month. So be safe there out there in Serbia. And stick around for the break here on TNT Radio.